Exodus, and we wrapped that up last year. And so it's crazy that now it is May, like the middle of May, almost the end of May. And we're going to start a new study today, a new book study. I'm excited about this one because we're going to turn our focus on 1 Samuel. And I love the book of 1 Samuel and all that it has for us. And it's a great book. And really what 1 Samuel really is, it really starts the life of David. And so this is a study on 1 Samuel, but you could almost intertwine the life of David is what this study is going to be about. But we're just going to walk through the first book of 1 Samuel and see where the Lord takes us. But I say the life of David because this is where it all starts in 1 Samuel. And to say David is important in the Bible would be a massive understatement, really, because we have more biographical material on David than any other person in the Bible except for Jesus. Okay, outside the narrative of his life, which is 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, David gets brought up 240 times, more times in the Bible outside of 1 and 2 Samuel. So 182 times in the Old Testament. He even shows up in the New Testament 59 times. And so you got to think about it. To the Jewish people, David is more than just like a historic figure. He's more like an icon, a symbol of the past greatness, future hope, and his story has all the makings of an epic drama, if you think about it. Think about how he started out. Lonely shepherd boy, right? Run to the litter, basically, right? Jesse's seventh son. Through act of courageous heroics, a warrior was birthed out of the defeat of Goliath. Then he goes on to become the most popular person of Israel, Israel's greatest king, Israel's greatest statesman, a warrior, a prolific songwriter. I mean, you could keep on and on about David. And the story of David for us, however, is more than just an interesting story of a great man. What we're going to see in the pattern of David's life is his pattern of salvation for us. And actually what David's life is going to do in 1 and 2 Samuel is going to create the silhouette that the Messiah is going to step into one day. And so David's story occurs at a time where Israel's demanding a king. They want a king. Up to this point, God had been their king, but Israel wants to be like all the other nations. Come on, you see this? They're going to get in trouble here. They want to be like everybody else. Everybody else has a king. Why don't we have a king, right? And they want a king who's going to give them a sense of national pride, a king who they believe, right? That's a big part there. They believe they're going to guarantee them prosperity, security. And that's where David connects to our story in the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. It's because everybody is searching for three things in life, if you think about it. Everyone's looking for identity, security, and happiness. Okay, everybody's looking for identity. All of us want something that gives us a sense of self-worth, a sense of self-significance, right? And so the question is, what is that for you? For some, it's how smart, how much money they got. It could be your health is your identity. If your family's is intact, maybe that's your sense of identity. Or maybe you're the type of person this morning who's always comparing themselves to someone else, right? Your whole day can be ruined by what something posts on social media. Oh, they got that, they got that. Or you're one of those persons, you see a social media post, and you're not looking at the person, you're looking beyond the person. Like, they get a new refrigerator, right? You're looking at things in the background. I think they got a new car. You're like, honey, look at this. Look at this. I think they got, you see that? And they're like, what? No, in the background. You see that? I think they got a new car. And so we're comparing ourselves to what, whose house is prettier, come on. And so a lot of times our self-worth consistently rises and falls on how you stack up or how your kids are doing or how about. And so we're searching for identity, where we find our identity. Then we look at security, okay? Security, what do you look to tell you the future is going to be okay? Fill in the blank. Fill in this blank. For as long as I have blank, everything will be all right. As long as I got my job, everything, as long as I got my 401k, as long as my family is healthy, everything's gonna be all right. Everybody's looking for security in this life. Everybody's looking for happiness. What makes life right now feel like worth living for you? What's the one thing that without that thing, you don't know if you can go on? So finish this sentence. I could imagine a good life without this marriage, without money, without success, without freedom, without health, without the approval of my family. Listen, the search for these three things, your identity, security, and happiness, is what our generation yearns for and what we see in the story of David. Which is why David's story opens up with another story that at first seems pretty random, right? It's a story of a childless woman really down on her luck. Her name's Hannah. And our story sets us up for the whole David narrative. Really, every theme in David's life was going to be introduced in our story this morning. And so we're going to break the story of 1 Samuel chapters 1 and 2 down this morning. We're going to look at Hannah. First thing we're going to look at Hannah is about Hannah's anguish, Hannah's hurt, right? Let me read to you verses 2 to 7, and let me just introduce this person to you this morning. He had two wives. Talk about Elkanah. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah. Their name was Peninnah, and Peninnah had children, and Hannah had no children. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions of Peninnah, his wife. I know I'm going to butcher that one all morning, but hey, listen, you do better. And to all her sons and daughters. Okay, verse 5. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her generously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. All right, so first off, right off the bat, you see that Hannah's hurt was so bad that she couldn't eat. Now listen, childlessness is difficult for any woman, but especially in this culture. Because in this society, that was literally the worst affliction a woman could endure, okay? For a number of reasons. The first one is this: that society was very agricultural. And so what that meant is the more sons you had, the more workers in the land you had, and so the more income your generation. So again, what that meant was more children, greater prosperity. And so this is why it was a big deal. Also, it was a big deal because they didn't have a 401k. They didn't have retirement homes. They had none of that. And so what that meant is your children were your retirement plan. The more kids you had, the better you're going to be taken care of. Come on, somebody said amen. Come on. Better treat your kids good, all I'm saying. All right, and then the last reason why this was a big deal for the Israelites, it was like a legacy thing, okay? This land had been given to the Israelites' families forever, and your family's portion was contingent on you having sons to hand down the land to. If you didn't have sons, it was like your family was being cut off from the inheritance. And so this was, back in this society, this was a huge, huge deal not to have a son, not to have kids. And so hopefully you start feeling Hannah's distress right now. Having kids was the main thing a woman did back then and the main way she brought value. And so the point I want you to see that this is the primary thing that gave women value in that culture. Okay, that was a primary thing, and Hannah had none of it. Does it make sense? Are you feeling her hurt this morning? Because this is how you have value in that society. And she had none of it. And what made matters worse is her rival, Banana. I didn't say banana, I said Pabana. Had lots of kids. And used that to torment Hannah. So Hannah is feeling this unhappiness, this frustration, this insecurity. Verse 7 tells us she's so depressed she can't even eat. And in verse 10, look at it, it says Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. So you see the hurt, you see the pain, you see the frustration. So she asked God to show her what she's done to anger him, that what she needs to change. She made a vow to God that she'd do whatever it takes to have a kid. But heaven was silent. And Fernanda's provocations were continual. The continual jabbing of, oh, you're not this. Oh, you're not that. Oh, you don't measure up. Oh, this is only for those of us who have. No. And the constant jabbing. Some of you know what that's like. When you understand that the one thing you feel like right now that brings value to your life, and you don't have that one thing. And what happens when you get on social media or Facebook or whatever, you see those who have the one thing, it's almost like every day you're getting provoked. You're feeling that hurt over and over and over again. So you can understand how Hannah's life felt miserable. That she failed in the one thing she thought mattered. And every day she was reminded of that. Are you feeling her pain? Elkan, her husband, he tries to be sweet. Look at verse 8. This is not good. Not a good deal here. Verse 8, why are you crying, Hannah? Elkan would ask. Why aren't you eating? Why be downhearted just because you have no children? Look at this next part. You're like, all the men here are shaking their heads. You have me? I mean, isn't that better than having 10 sons? I mean, he's trying to be sweet. You know, we got to give him a break. He's trying to be sweet. You know, you don't have kids, but you have me. I mean, I count for like 10 sons. I should be good enough, right? And so he's trying to be sweet, but this doesn't work out for her there. But before we go any farther, I want to stop and ask you, where is this happening for you in your life right now? Where's the hurt? Where's the pain? Where's the anguish? There may be something in your life you feel like this brings my life value. If my kids are successful, my kids or my grandkids are successful, if I've got the retirement set up right, and when those things don't happen, but we're reminded of it, we feel the pain and anguish. We feel we can relate to Hannah. But where is this happening for you? Because every culture has things by which they assign value to, things that are important. In our culture, it's what you've accomplished according to the world's value. What kind of earning potential you have? Are you in a relationship? Are you married? Are your kids successful? Is your 401k successful? But let me ask you again: where have you felt judged by this culture? That this morning you walked in and you're in deep anguish inwards. Because a lot of times, as it was with Hannah, it's not even a standard you signed up for. It just kind of happens. Like you don't like it, but you still feel the weight of it, and it feels like it's crushing you. And maybe like Hannah, you've been tempted to turn to something else to fill that void. For her, is it affection of her husband. If I slow down a little bit, I'll get it. Or maybe your lack in one area has produced you to drive to succeed in another area that you feel worthy of. like, this brings worth to my life. Maybe there's some Elkins somewhere in your life that says, oh, don't worry that you're not enough here. My love's enough for you. And you feel like slapping those people sometimes. Oh, don't worry that you don't measure up. I'm good enough for you. So how do you deal with the anguish of society telling you that you're not good enough? Some people turn to other things to fill that void. Some to turn to drugs, some to alcohol or other stimulants to help fill that void. But just like with Hannah, it's not working. Because I know there's some you can relate to Hannah this morning. I mean, our culture is different, but not that different. There's a key part. Your identity is missing, and you're being crushed by the weight of it. But we see the hurt that Hannah's experiencing, right? And I want to show you the hope. Actually, the turning point we see in Hannah's life. Look at verse 9. This is the turning point of Hannah's story, but if you're not watching closely, you'll miss it. Because verse 9 says, after they'd eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. So Hannah rose is not just some random detail, like after dinner she stood up and went to the living room. That word rose in Hebrew indicates a decisive action, that she stood up, right? She stood up, she resolved, she made a choice, she made a decision. And what was that choice? Well, look at verse 11, we see that choice. It says, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. No razor shall touch his head. So a lot of information right there, important stuff you need to see. So she just vowed, she's saying no razor is going to touch his head. She indicated an intention to take the Nazirite vow. And that's dedicating your kid to service. So in those days, you couldn't just become a priest, right? In order to become a priest, you had to be born in the tribe of Levi. If you weren't born in the tribe of Levi, you had to take a Nazirite vow. This is important because this is what you need to see. So when you take that Nazirite vow, you basically renounce membership in your family. You give up all your inheritance and you go live in the temple. Are you following? Are you seeing what's happening here? So basically, Hannah is renouncing everything she would have wanted a son for in the first place. Hope you're connected to us. This is what I need. This is what's going to bring value to my life. This is everything. And then the next breath, she's like, he's going to take the Nazirite vow. That meant that this child would not grow up in her house. She would not have the joy of having him around. She wouldn't get to show him off at all the school plays and the dramas and the baseball games, all that stuff. He would not provide for her in his old age, in her old age. Right? In this statement, she renounced everything she would have hoped to obtain in a son. This is huge. Watch it. When she gets done praying, look at verse 18. Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. This is incredible. She renounced the one thing she thought she needed to be happy, and now she's no longer sad. Are you kidding me? And yeah, she's going to get pregnant at the end of this chapter, and she's going to be joyful when she finds out. But I want you to see the order of things here. It's very important. It wasn't that she prayed, she got pregnant, and then she had joy. It was she prayed, then she got joy, and then she got pregnant. You see the order? The order matters in this thing. She prayed. She got joy. And then she got pregnant. What happened? The hold that childbearing was having on her happiness was broken in that time of prayer. that Hannah found a new source of identity, a new security, and a new happiness. And what was it? Okay, for that, we go to chapter 2. Chapter 2 is like Hannah's song. It's like Hannah's praise, the way we see in chapter 2. Look at it. She writes it in verses 1 and verses 2. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord. There's none holy like the Lord. For there is none beside you. There's no rock like our God." Basically saying, my heart exalts in the Lord. My delight is no longer found in having kids, but is found in God. Why? Because He's my rock. Because there's not a better source of identity, security, or happiness than God. Hannah goes on in the song to talk about God's unfathomable wisdom, His strength, His beauty, His holiness. She says, there's none holy like the Lord, for there's none beside you. In other words, knowing you is the ultimate treasure. Listen, she's saying, in you, God, I have the absolute approval of the only one whose opinion matters. And now she found her identity, she found her security, she found her happiness in Him. She's saying in this song, she's saying, I'm no longer dependent on children to provide this, having them, don't have them. I have you, God. And that was ultimately Hannah's salvation, learning to find God in what she previously sought in having kids. If you read her song, you read her song in chapter 2, it goes on in verse 4 to 8, she's going to contrast two different ways people go about trying to find identity, security, and happiness in the result of each way. Look at that, verse 4, it says, the bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who are full have tired themselves out for bread, but those who are hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Shiloh and raises up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap. And so in this, we see she gives us two ways to try to establish your identity, security, and happiness. The first way is a way of pride. You establish your identity, your security, happiness by your own strength, by your own bow. Through your own strength, through your own talents, through your own property, through your own popularity, through your own way of making money, or your own skill, your own labor. And she's saying that's one way. Through your own pride, you think you can make your way. You can find your identity, your security, your happiness, and your own strength. I can do this. And she said the other way is a way of faith. You lean into God. You let Him be the source of these things. You seek your identity, your security, your happiness through the way of pride. She says in her story, you're going to end up broken, hungry, and poor. But if you seek these things via the way of faith, you're going to end up strong, fruitful, abundantly overflowing. Oh, and by the way, Hannah did go on to have a son. His name was Samuel. He becomes one of the greatest prophets Israel's ever known. In verse 5, Hannah says, the barren has borne 7. So she has 7 kids now. Anybody remember the number of 7 in the Hebrew context? The number of completion? Look at verse 21. I don't think I get, well, I might have it there. And indeed, the Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and bore 3 sons and 2 daughters. Blessed her with multiple children. Listen, I want to point out this because it's in the text, but please don't hear what I'm saying this morning, that as soon as you get your heart right, God's going to give you what you wanted. That's not what I'm saying. That's not the point of this story. But God is a God who loves to bless people. And it is often when we lay down our idolatries and we release the things holding us back that God blesses us. But listen, a better version, an eternal significant version of this is that she found all these things in God. all the things she was looking for in having that one son, she found in God. I'm going to close this out this morning by pointing out the parallels we see. There's a parallel between Hannah's story and Israel's story. Just like Hannah sought identity and happiness and security in a son, Israel sought these things in a king. To Hannah, God said, these things aren't found in sons. And to Israel, God said, these things are not found in a king. Both Hannah and Israel, he says, identity, security, happiness are found in me. And there's a parallel between Hannah's story and your story also. Because Hannah looked for identity in a son, security in a son, happiness in a son. Israel looked for it in a king. The question is, where are you and I looking for it this morning? Where are you looking for identity, security, and happiness at this morning? Well, Pastor, your first service. I understand. But I know human nature. And it's so easy for us to allow these things in our life to slip into that place where we think, oh, I find my happiness in that. I find my identity in that. I find my security in that. I find my identity on what I did this, what my job was. Like I was this. You still identify as that. That's your identity, or you find your happiness in what you've attained through this life. What are you looking for? What's the one thing you must have for life to be good? What do you care the most about obtaining? What's one thing you can't imagine your life? What would be one thing if you lost it would be devastating to you? Maybe you walked in this morning. Where are you roaring inside with dissatisfaction and jealousy right now? What's the one thing you feel so driven to obtain? It's like you can't even eat sometimes. What are you seeking? How are you seeking it? Because this morning what we find in our story is our identity is found in being His child. His servant, doing His will, hearing, well done, good and faithful. You know what the problem is? It doesn't line up with our culture. The house, the kids, the great-grandkids, the education they got, the degrees they got, the position they got, that's what our world says. This is what matters. But in God's saying, it matters that I'm found as your identity. But when we compare it to those around us, we compare it to our friends who are not followers, who are not believers, who are not living a Christian life. They say they are, but they're not. And their stack is looking pretty good. You're like, well, I found mine in God. God doesn't come across on social media as well as can we just be honest? Your security is knowing that He holds you in His hand and that nothing and no one can ever remove you. Your happiness is found in doing His will and knowing He will never leave you nor forsake you. Listen, He's a king Israel's looking for, Hannah was looking for, and you and I are looking for. And please don't mistake this. If something else is slipping out of spot, I'm not saying you're a terrible person. I'm just saying it happens sometimes. Sometimes if we're not careful, these things slip into the place of God in our lives, and we think, okay, well, I got to have that. And reality is, can you show the last slide, Chris? This is the reality of it. is we want everything and Jesus. But in reality, that equals nothing. If we realize that Jesus plus nothing equals everything. But this math doesn't add up in our society. It's like we're trying to introduce new math to people, and they're like, that doesn't work. This works. But we get those things, it's so easy to get those things switched around. For Hannah, Jesus was life, Jesus was enough. Was it Jesus plus nothing is the greatest gift that God can give you. Won't you stand with us this morning? You know, I'm horrible at songs. Telling you who wrote it, telling you the name of the song, like that is just not, I don't pay attention to those things. Like ask Nolan, ask Noah, ask Mark, like they know songs, they know the writers of songs, they know the names of songs. And there's a one old song, as soon as I say the first couple words of it, you'll know it. My hope is built on nothing less than what? The Jesus' blood and righteousness. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. Would you believe, if you believe that, would you say amen this morning? Heavenly Father, Lord God, I pray this morning we see and we're reminded that it's you plus nothing equals everything. Remind us not to be fooled by this world. Say, oh, you can have all this plus Jesus and you will be fulfilled. But God, that you just remind us today that the how we order our life as Jesus' blood in righteousness. And my hope is built on nothing less than that this morning. Lord, I pray if there's anyone in here who got that out of order,